I call where I live Forgotten America for a reason. I mean, you look at the news anchors and so forth that sit in New York and Washington and sometimes L.A. that they don't leave their desk very often. And so when we talk about the upper Midwest, that being Michigan and Pennsylvania and Ohio, this is Forgotten America. But when I lived in Montana, where I went to college years ago, I believe that the Western United States, the states like Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, the Dakotas, they are more forgotten than we are in the Rust Belt. Of course, their populations are lower. And people on the East Coast think they can dictate to these folks how to run pasture land, how to run a ranch, when they have absolutely no clue what they're talking about. My next guest, Andrew Langer, the president of the Institute for Liberty, a regular contributor to this program. He also contributes to the American Spectator and townhall.com. Andrew, welcome back.
Great to be on, Steve.
Always good to have you here, bright and cheery. You're looking great. What is it about the Western United States? When I lived in Montana, went to Montana State to college back in the day, I came to the opinion that if people in Washington had their way, if people in Connecticut and Massachusetts had their way, they would just run a fence around the whole state and call it a national park and be done with it. I'm serious. They don't care.
Well, that's exactly it.
Yeah. They don't care about it.
Well, it's so funny. You know, I had a conversation with a former congresswoman from Idaho. Now, the late, great Helen Chenoweth, who was a lion in the property rights movement.
Right.
And we were having dinner one night, her and me and the dean of the private conservation movement, a guy named R.J. Smith from the Center for Private Conservation at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're chatting about things. Now, I had worked, just so folks understand, I got my very first job in D.C. was working for a blind environmental attorney who had been President Reagan's, the head of his Environment and Natural Resources Division. So I had been reading the law to him, and I got essentially a graduate education from this gentleman in environmental policy. And one of the things that I learned, and it's a truism even today, is that you're absolutely correct. Everybody thinks that the federally owned lands out west are all owned for recreation purposes and recreation purposes alone.
Not true.
They forget. And so I was explaining this to Helen Chenoweth one night. You know, this is why you have the National Forest Service lands are managed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, not the Department of the Interior. And why is that? Because the Forest Service is supposed to view timberlands as crops. It's supposed to be crop production. It's resource utilization. And Steve, you know, and the other part of the problem is that folks in the East simply do not know the level of federal land ownership in the West. So we were representing, this is now 25 years ago, we were representing a county in Nevada that was the third largest county in the United States, the size of Vermont and New Hampshire combined.
Right.
And it was 93% owned by the federal government. And that creates huge burdens on local government in terms of their ability to govern effectively.
Well, it does. And I want to jump in here, Andrew, because this is important to understand. This is important to understand because you have massive federal land holdings in Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming. Like you mentioned, there is no provision in the United States Constitution for the United States government to have all of these land holdings. When the state becomes a state, that's supposed to become state land. Then it becomes private land. But somehow that was all kind of ignored.
Let's be really clear here. When all of these territories became states, they entered into a contractual relationship with the federal government. And the states, the state territorial government said, we're going to give you, federal government, we're going to give you this land so that you can clear title to it, and then you will dispose of this land. That was the arrangement. We give you this land to clear it, to facilitate you giving it away or selling it. But that was the deal. And the federal government sort of went along with that for a certain degree of time. And then in the 70s, something called the Federal Land Policy and Management Act was passed, which flipped those contractual obligations on their head. Now, no state has ever sued over breach of contract with the federal government. I think most folks in these states have no idea what's in those state enabling acts. As I said, I wound up spending some time in the Library of Congress looking at this, and every state that came into the Union after 1848, after we acquired all of this land from Mexico in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo.
Right.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds on a Wednesday morning. But all of those states had these codicils. And that's why any state that came into the Union before 1848 has very little federal land ownership. But every state that came into the Union after 1848 has massive federal land ownership.
Here's my question. Andrew Langer here with us from the Institute for Liberty. My question is this. You've got states like Nevada and New Mexico and Arizona that are proportionately so much federal land, it's unbelievable. Do they, under what you've studied and learned at the Library of Congress and elsewhere, could they say, wait a second, this land was supposed to come to us. This land is supposed to be something that we can facilitate, because what you have is the giant boot of the federal government telling ranchers and farmers and all these other folks, you can graze here, you can't graze here, the timber rights are this, the water rights are that. And so you have the federal government dictating to state residents how they can conduct themselves when it comes to agriculture, right?
Well, yes, and there's certainly an avenue if some creative, clever lawyer, that's a fight that I would love to support and write about, if some lawyer was going to finally challenge the Federal Land Policy and Management Act as a breach of contract of the states. But let me just say this much, Steve. It's worse because, remember, the propensity is to, A, move these lands away from resource utilization into recreation, and then in some cases, like in Arizona, to move them out of, you know, mass recreation into wilderness status. And that has an issue. If you are putting wilderness lands and creating greater wilderness lands on the border between the United States and Mexico, you are essentially facilitating the transit of illegal migrants across the borders.
Because you can't build a fence.
Exactly what
Raul
Grijalva does.
That's exactly. You can't build a fence.
Well,
you can't build a wall. That's exactly right. In fact, I know this from my days in television. You can't even take a camera, a small video camera, into designated wilderness and film for any reason without a permit. And the permits are very expensive. And trust me, if you get caught filming without a permit in designated wilderness, they will come take your camera, your business, your truck. They'll take everything from you, will the federal government. It's overreach. It's bizarre. And you're right, because multi-use is what most people want for federal land. So you could take a quad or go up there fishing with a truck. That's not allowed in wilderness land. And Bill Clinton put out millions and millions of acres, and everybody has since. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. And listen, just to real quick, because I don't know how much time we have, but I do want to say there are other issues that we're also dealing with that move away from land property rights. There's a particular issue in Oregon and a couple of other states right now that have to do with intellectual property and property rights, and folks going and trying to force state governments to change that. So please go and check out the Institute for Liberty page on Facebook. We have some information going up, especially as to what's going on in Oregon right now.
And it sounds to me, Andrew, is that we got a good foundation in our education today, but we need to have you back to explore this deeper, because we're just scratching the surface. And it's always good to have you here, because you're very well versed on all of these things and you share it well. Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty, thank you for being here. And we will reschedule you soon, because we've got to get to the bottom of this, because private land ownership is a cornerstone of this republic. Thank you.
Absolutely.
There you have it. Andrew Langer. Guy's brilliant and a great contributor. Yeah. We're bad. We're nationwide. This is the Steve Rivers Show.
For more than 65 years, Enbridge has been safely delivering the North American energy you rely on to fuel your vehicle, heat your home, and power commerce and manufacturing. We're proud to be a part of communities across Michigan and contribute millions in local property taxes each year, which helps support schools, emergency responders, and local government needs. At Enbridge, we're helping to fuel your quality of life. Learn more at Enbridge.com/Michigan. Enbridge. Life takes energy.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra bucks is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behaviour. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council. This is how we do every day.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.